Welcome to the Attached Life Podcast. You're listening to the Stories of Healing series. Each episode will give you a view into what inner healing looks like. Instead of just talking about therapeutic concepts, this series takes you inside the experience. Thank you for listening, and I hope you enjoy. Welcome to the first Stories of Healing episode, where I'm going to share what it's like in a session with a fictional client of mine. This fictional client we'll call Moshe. Moshe's story is a real story, though it's not any individual specific person's story, as I don't feel comfortable sharing that. But it is a real story in the sense that everything I'm going to describe are experiences that I have experienced with people. And I'm taking and putting together a few different memories I have of working with different individuals and kind of combining it into one story that could absolutely be true and accurate in a real kind of a way, in a genuine kind of a way. And the idea here is not that this story is necessarily your story or anybody who's listening in exactly the way that I'm going to tell it, but that you can find concepts and ideas and understanding and insight into yourself by listening to this and by seeing what it's like on the inside to really try and get in touch with our inner selves and the inner kind of healing that we all so deeply need. So Moshe, let's call him, is in his late 20s. He's single, and he struggles with a kind of experience that he didn't necessarily call it this coming in, but we might call it a bipolar 2 kind of presentation. What I mean by that is that he described, on the one hand, feeling moments of being very elated, having a lot of highs, kind of a sense that he's connected to something very lofty, very spiritual. His high is not necessarily the type of high of an addiction sort of high. It's not a behavior. It's not a thrill seeking. It's not with some sort of substance or anything of that nature. It's more of a high in a spiritual sense, actually, that he almost feels kind of disconnected from this world, almost disembodied in a sense. But then he has long stretches and more typical days of feeling very low, feeling very unproductive, not wanting to get out of bed, having more depressive symptoms. Now, I call this bipolar 2 because I think it's important to frame this in the context of a range of different experiences that people have. A more extreme range of this will actually potentially qualify for what might be called more traditional bipolar, which is that the highs have more mania to them. So a person in that kind of high might actually have a break from reality. There might be psychosis, there might be imagining or paranoia of different things as if they're reality. Or there just may be surges of energy, of productivity, of not sleeping for days straight, taking on new hobbies, a kind of manic binge of engaging in the world in a way that is really, really powerful, but also somewhat out of control, which is then followed also by major crashes downwards into deep and difficult and often dark depression and episodes that can stretch a long time in that kind of depression and can kind of cycle back and forth. And that's kind of an extreme of a more typical presentation of bipolar. And then a less extreme version of that is what I was describing for Moshe. But then also, an even less extreme version of that is something that I think many people experience, which is experiences of feeling very energized, very amped up, very motivated, highly driven, but then also having stretches of time of feeling really underwhelmed by life, feeling really disconnected, disenchanted. And that exists on a spectrum, and I think it's very helpful and I think very important to frame some of these mental health challenges, even when they present in more extreme ways, to understand that it's on a sliding scale. Now, there are quantum leaps on that sliding scale, and medication has to be taken into account when things become more serious, and they have to be related to in different ways, but conceptually, in a kind of humanistic way, understanding that there's a human experience at play here that, on some level, many people connect to and struggle with. So Moshe is describing to me in the way that he presents his challenge that there's these moments again where he feels somewhat disembodied, and he feels like it on the one hand feels really good, he describes, but he also feels that there's something unsettling about it. It doesn't feel right. And then he has these typical days of just feeling very, very depressed. And so we were talking about this concept that I just described on that sliding scale, and how what I offer to him is the perspective that what I find to sometimes be the case, there can be a chemical component to this, especially when it's more profound, and that's very important to address and very important to name, and that's where it's also important to consult with a psychiatrist and see if there's a medication approach and angle that needs to be taken here. But from a more humanistic or existential or trauma-informed view, another way we might think about this phenomenon, in addition to the chemical component, is that the reality of this world in a kind of baseline way, the simple plain experience of this world, the engagement in the present in its most direct way, for some people can feel unsafe in some way, or can feel scary or sad or painful or threatening. And it could be many things, and I purposely keep that vague and name many options, multiple options. And if it feels like any of those things or anything distressing, it's natural and understandable that a person is going to try and escape that or try and find the route to the least pain possible to feel more safe. And there's one of two directions that a person can do that. One is to escape the world by kind of launching upwards, to escape the world by disembodying from the world, by feeling so connected to something otherworldly that they don't have to feel the experience of being grounded in this reality. That's one option. The other option is to check out and shut down, to power down. Instead of powering up and kind of launching upwards, it's to just turn the system off and go into a kind of sleep state where I'm disconnected from the world because my system is just kind of turned off. And that can look like and feel like depression and could really be what underlies depression. And so some people have one of those modes for coping and surviving when a grounded experience of reality doesn't feel good. But some people actually have an oscillation between the two of those different responses and different survival techniques and coping mechanisms. And that's what can sometimes look like bipolar anywhere on that spectrum, on that range of what bipolar can look like. And so I offered this conceptualization to him and asked, how does this resonate with you? Does any of that land for you? Does anything about that feel accurate in your system, that perhaps when you're not elated and disembodied in a highway and you're not powered down and in bed in a low way, but when you're present to this reality, something doesn't feel right? Does that ring true in some way, shape, or form? To which he responded that it very much did. And what he went on to describe is that he feels that if he is here, if he's present, if he is engaged in what's around him, he lives with a sense of intrusion, that there's something that feels like it's intruding into his system, like he's picking up on other people's feelings, other people's energy almost, like it's something that is getting into his system. It's touching him too much, like there's something getting in his feelings from whatever is around him. And I asked him to notice that as he says that and see what he feels in his body as he describes that to me. And so in slowing down and taking a moment, he then described that his body in that moment was feeling two things. There was a deep kind of underlying stiffness in his chest and in his heart, like there was something very stiff. And then on more of the surface, there was a kind of tremor, a kind of shaking. And I asked him to notice that and see if he wanted to pick one of those sensations to take note of and see what it's like to simply allow that sensation, that physical sensation, to be present and see what happens next. And he then said, it feels like I'm in a fight-flight mode, when I'm in this experience. Like, I'm just in a constant fight flight. And he asked me why. He said, do you think that's like a chemical thing? Or do you think that's from my experiences? What do you think that's about? So I said that sometimes what I find is that there is an experience for people in childhood where if a person is in an environment where somebody in that environment or something in that environment carries a lot of activation, a lot of either anger or takes up a lot of space, or somebody is very dysregulated and you grow up in that environment and you are, that person is present in your space all the time without really knowing how to regulate themselves, without really knowing how to manage their own presence in the presence of other people. But instead, their anger spills out, their dysregulation and their stress or their anxiety spills out into and onto other people. So then what can happen is that the child growing up in that environment can sometimes do one of two things. They can either become more desensitized and put up kind of a thick barrier and a wall around them, so that they don't have to receive the distress of the other person, the anxiety of the other person, the anger of the other person, because if they would, it would be too overwhelming and too distressing and too dysregulating for their own system. And so they put up this kind of this fortress around them. And those people will often then later in life struggle with knowing their feelings, knowing other people's feelings, with feeling empathy, with being able to attune to other people around them, to pick up on body language and cues of what other people are experiencing and how they're interacting with them. And that can be a challenge, but it's rooted in a survival mechanism of trying to make sure that the person that was in their environment as a child didn't overtake their entirety of their emotional and physiological systems regulation. But there's also another possibility and another way that people can try to manage and adapt to the environment when there's somebody whose nervous system and physiological presence is so spilling out and so dysregulated and distressing and activating. And that is to become more attuned to what's around us. Instead of shutting down and putting up a fortress around us, it's actually that the kind of barrier or the bubble of personal space actually gets breached. And now I'm becoming hyper-attuned and hypersensitive to what the person and what people around me are feeling, because I'm kind of, in a sense, walking on eggshells. I'm trying to navigate. I'm constantly in a kind of hyper-vigilant or hypersensitive state, trying to navigate and adapt to what's around me to make sure I don't step on a landmine, to make sure I don't set something off, to be prepared for when something's about to come. Oftentimes, even to try and help the situation, to try and be there for the person or try and make things better. And when that happens, instead of becoming more numb or more callous, the person actually becomes more sensitive. And the natural sense of my own personhood, which lives in contrast with your personhood, my system, my state of regulation or dysregulation, which lives and exists in distinction from the nervous system and the state of being of the systems of people around me, that those distinctions no longer really exist because my wall has been breached. And so now I'm kind of, again, as a way of adapting, a way of trying to take care of myself, I am constantly tuned in almost chronically to the state of being of the people around me. And I'm taking all of that in. So I described this to Moshe and asked him if he felt that might be a possibility, if that resonates, or if anyone in his childhood fit that profile, if that could possibly have been the case in any way. And as I was describing it, I was already able to see in his body language that something was really clicking, that he was feeling very seen and very validated in what I was describing. And he confirmed that. And I asked him to notice, as I was describing this, what are you feeling? What do you notice in your body? And so he described more intense sensations in his body, that the stiffening was becoming more and more pronounced, that the sense of being tight was there more. And I asked him, and we had already met a number of times, so he knew what it meant to connect with the physical sensation in his body and the interesting questions that I ask about these kinds of things were already more natural to him. I asked him, if the stiffness in your chest could speak, what would it say? And he said that it would say, I should be swallowed up and I shouldn't be here. And we sat with that for a moment, and I asked him what he felt emotionally. What's the emotion that goes along with that? And he said a lot of sadness. And so then we noticed it, and I asked him, would it be okay to sit with that and see what happens next, to notice the sensation, to notice the stiffness? Does it feel like an amount that you can be present to and see what happens next? Which he said yes, and he sat with it more. And as often happens, he sat with it a bit more, and it came up a little bit more strongly. And he told me about the home he grew up in and having a mother who was very moody, had a lot of mood swings and a lot of anger, and at times would be an amazing mother and a very loving mother, but at times would be in these very bad moods, very stressed out and very angry, and would really become intrusive on his space and other people's space. But as he was saying this, he was telling this to me, and it was meaningful, but he also then started describing that it didn't really feel like what was really underlying this. But then he went on, and we sat with the physical sensation even a little bit more. And what came up for him then very clearly was an older brother. That he had an older brother who, as older brothers can sometimes do, was an older brother. And he bullied him a lot and would really kind of take over the scene. Took up all the space around him, and even physically and certainly emotionally and verbally would really bully him and hurt him. And he didn't have a sense of protection. He wasn't really protected. The parents didn't really step in to try and help with that situation. And as he thought about this brother, it really clicked that this feeling of I should be swallowed up, I shouldn't be here, and this stiffness were really resonating and being present. And what we then discussed was that the tremor then also came back that he had described before. And what I offered him is the possibility that in our system, in our nervous system, when we have a threat around us, there's someone who's attacking us, let's call it, like this older brother. On the one hand, we want to flee or fight. We want to get out of the situation or overcome the threat, get away from the threat or overpower the threat. And so that produces some activation in the body. That produces energy, because in order to run or in order to respond, we need to have energy to do that. But sometimes our system gets the sense that no matter what energy we have, we can't run away from this and we can't overpower this. It's too big for us. And so then our body goes into the next adaptive survival mechanism, which is to then freeze and to go into a state of just almost in a sense accepting the helplessness and trying to help in the best way possible by kind of going numb and just checking out. Sometimes this might be thought of as dissociation. And so what I said is, I wonder if the stiffness feels like just freezing and the tremor feels like the body considering almost to some degree producing energy to respond, to flee or to fight. And both of these things are happening in your body at the same time, because when there's this threat, your body wanted to respond with fighting or fleeing, but then and there's this tremor because there's some adrenaline, there's some energy that's produced in the nervous system, but then it freezes because it has nothing to do with that energy, and that creates the stiffness. And this made a lot of sense to him, and so I said, let's take this one piece at a time. And at this point in a session, when this kind of a situation, there's so many different directions we can go, and there's so many things we can do here. And I asked him, if you notice the tremor, because we have been focusing on the stiffness until this point, but if you notice the tremor, if that feels like a fight-flight energy, what would that energy have wanted to do? If anything was possible, if you could imagine anything, using fantasy resources, It doesn't have to be something that could have happened or did happen. What would you imagine wanting to do? What is that tremor? What does that energy want to do? And he said it wants to be able to run away. It doesn't want to hurt my brother, but it wants to be able to run away. I said, okay, so can you imagine yourself being able to run away? And so he tried imagining it, but he felt very stuck, very blocked. Because he said his brother, in this image that was coming up for him, his brother was on top of him, so he couldn't run away. So I said, what would you need to happen in order to be able to run away? What do you wish could have happened when he was on top of you? And you had this energy to run away, but you couldn't use it. What do you wish could have happened? And he said, I wish that my father would have come and pulled my brother off of me. So I said, okay, so imagine that. Imagine you could have used your energy to scream and to get someone's attention. And then imagine your father coming over and pulling your brother off of you just enough that you can then run away. And so he imagines this, and you can see the energy in his body building and getting more. And he's describing this to me. But then as he uses the energy, and I ask him to try to really vividly imagine running and using the energy to get out and get away so that that energy can get released from the body, because then it gets used up as it was produced to be used, but it got frozen and stuck in the body because it couldn't get used. And so now try and use it. And so he does this, and we take a moment, and then you notice from going from the activation to the body now settling down. And it has discharged the energy, and I ask him to describe this. I see him take a deep breath, an involuntary deep breath. Not a deep breath that's gasping for air, but a deep breath that's almost like letting the air out of the balloon. And so now he's really coming back into the present. And we notice that, and we sit with that for a moment and see what happens next. And as he's sitting with this, he describes feeling much more settled, much more okay, much more present. Nothing's ever perfect in these kinds of processes, so there are more details, more nuances, ups and downs, what we call pendulations that have taken place in this process. But I'm kind of taking you through the overall process here. And I ask him what he notices in his body, and he says he feels more settled, more at ease. So I ask him, if this new feeling of feeling more settled could have a belief that goes along with it, instead of the old belief of I should be swallowed up, I shouldn't be here. If there was a new belief that you could have, that you could choose to have, what would it be? And together what we came up with was, I have the right to my own personal space. And so I asked him to say this and notice what it's like in his body. I have the right to my own personal space. And he said that it feels too self-centered. So I said, what about if we change the language to Hashem created me, God created me with the right to my own personal space. And he nodded, and I said, you know, and halachically, from a Jewish law and tradition perspective, this is actually true, because we know that halacha dictates that if somebody damages you physically or steals from you or goes into your property without permission, there are halachos that govern these things. There's a dictated sense of personal space that a person has that halacha actually mandates. And so what would it be like to say this again? Hashem created me with the right to my own personal space. And he says this, and it's resonating, and you could see it, and he's taking a deep breath. But then he pendulates. And when I say pendulate, what I'm referring to is that the body goes from what we call the healing vortex, from being in a place of presence and feeling safe in what's around us and drawing upon positive resources, and shifts then back into the trauma vortex, which is the old stuff, the stuff that makes us doubt and the stuff that makes us unsafe. And goes back there, and we are always pendulating from distress to regulation. And he says, as he pendulates back into the distress, he says, but it doesn't feel true, because I really should be swallowed up. And we note that this is the old belief again. This is a coping mechanism. And sometimes we'll stop and explore more where this came from. Sometimes we'll notice what that's like in the body, and sometimes we'll see if there's another memory that's coming up. But in this instance, I decided to, just following my intuition, just ask him, what is it like in your body when you say that? And he said, I feel that stiffness again, but actually a lot less than before. He said, so what's it like to notice that you feel it a lot less than you did before, just 30 minutes ago in the session? And he notices that, and then a big involuntary breath comes, and his body shifts, and his shoulders drop a little bit. And so at that point, I say, okay, so what would it be like again to say, Hashem created me with the right to my own personal space? And he says it again, and I ask him to notice what that's like in his body. And he says it feels a little more settled. But what I notice as he's saying this new belief is that he's not making eye contact. He's kind of looking down, and he's saying it in a kind of half-hearted way. So I say, Moshe, could you try and say that belief, but this time embody it a little bit more with a little more conviction, to whatever extent feels right to you? And so he leans up a little bit more, sits up a little bit more straight, and he says it again, Hashem created me with the right to my own personal space. And there's a deep breath that sets in. And I say, and what about saying it again with even more conviction and a little bit of a louder voice? And he says it again. And I say, and what about this time with that fully embodied posture and the louder voice? And this time even make eye contact with me as you say it. And he says it again. And I ask him what he notices. And he says he feels a lot lighter, that he doesn't feel the need to escape. And so then I invite him to circle back to where we started, and point out that all of this connects back to the core piece we started with, which is that those high is the disembodiment, and the lows are ways of getting out of the present, because in the present, there was a breach of your personal space that made you hyper-attuned and hypersensitive to what everyone around you is feeling, which is overwhelming and too much to the system, and so you need to get out of it. But if you now have the right to your own personal space, because that's what Hashem created you with, and Hashem gave you that, what would it be like to be back here in reality? That you actually could be here, not needing to take in everything that everyone else is feeling. That you can be present to feeling what you're feeling, and someone else nearby can feel what they're feeling, and you can notice it, but you don't have to take it in, you don't have to carry it. And even if you do take it in, you can give it back. You don't have to, it doesn't have to attach to you and become yours. Your nervous system can be in its own state, and you can choose to let some things in and not let in other things, or let some things in and put them back out there, and have your own state of regulation and dysregulation. How possible does that feel? And he said that it feels possible, feels a lot more possible than he ever imagined it could have felt, but it certainly doesn't feel like it's there yet. But I asked him to notice what that's like, that duality. On the one hand, it feels a lot more possible than he could have ever imagined. And also that he feels that it's not really there yet. It's not perfect. And how that's okay. That's part of process. That's part of what it means to be alive, that we're in a work in progress. And he took that in and settled, and that's where we ended the session. I think this is an instructive session because there are so many different principles and concepts in here, in that particular work, that can be relevant to so many people in different ways. The awareness of the body, allowing the body to have the time to feel what it's feeling and to allow it to speak to us, to allow it to bring us back to experiences that it's still carrying and holding, allowing it to discharge those experiences, using what we call corrective experience, imagination, fantasy, to recreate the experience in a way that it could have gone different. And people often wonder, like, what's the point in that? It's not real. But I always, the way I like to think about it is, like, it's like a vitamin. If you have a deficiency of some nutrient or something in your body that you need, you might take vitamins. So if you had a deficiency of protection, let's say, as a child, so you can take a vitamin of added doses of protection. And you can do that through fantasy because it actually affects the brain in a powerful way and creates new neural pathways. We also engage in what it's like to create a new positive belief and to try and embody that and try and really process through that. And I also particularly like this because it wasn't perfect and it didn't have a happy after all kind of fairy tale ending. We didn't get to any closure or 100% completion of anything. But this is the nature of the journey and the process and the work of inner healing. And hopefully some of these concepts and ideas can be relevant to you. And maybe most of all, the principle underlying all of this work that I think to be so important is that even the things that we experience now as problematic or difficult in our lives are most of the time, if not all the time, rooted in something that was originally trying to help us. And when we look for it, when we search within ourselves from that perspective and from that lens, we gain the possibility of so much more insight and self-understanding and self-healing.